Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Ukraine's Air Force says it has repelled one of the largest aerial barrages launched by Russia in this war, and it was the central region of Kyiv that was the target overnight. That's where Joseph Lindsley is. Let's get the latest from him right now. Joe, what's happening?
Hey, Bob. Good afternoon. It was quite a night in Kyiv. I mean, I've been through more serious and intense attacks before. During these past 887 days of Russia's full-scale war. But last night, you know, we've had, since that attack on the Russian attack on the Ukrainian hospital, the top kids cancer hospital, more than 3 weeks ago, it's been calm and peaceful here in Kyiv. Many people don't have power most of the day. But beyond that, you've not had any attacks on the city. And then last night, we had reports that Russian bombers had taken off deeper into Russia in the very places where Washington still prohibits Ukraine from attacking. And so there was an expectation of a major missile attack. But instead, it was really a drone attack through the night, and especially around Kyiv. I mean, I've never seen, I think maybe it's been probably about a year since there have been this many Russian drones trying to enter and attack Kyiv City. But the difference was the Ukrainian air defense worked incredibly well. So even here in the center of Kyiv, I only heard even a few of the explosions, because most of the drones that were trying to approach the city were taken down before they could actually reach the city limits. But the Russians tried for many hours through the night, up until almost sunrise, trying to attack Kyiv from the north, the south, the east, and the west. The drones sort of dancing around, and so that, you know, this has happened so often. Russia had a pause of several weeks. They have time to sort of restock and resupply and figure out their next approach of attack. And so it's Kyiv is. It's calm, but you know, it's I would say it's a success of Ukrainian air defense versus this drone attack, but still a rather sleepless night for most people here.
Yeah, I can imagine. The report is 89 drones and one missile. In another city, Kharkiv, a story in the Tribune today, headline, "The Mood Here Has Become Worse," and the story goes on to talk about how this once thriving area of Ukraine, after being hit pretty hard early in the war, experienced a period of relative calm, and now has been hit by new bombings, and the people there are getting very frustrated, aren't they, Joe?
Yes, in a way, but I think, and this is something that has been missed a lot in the stories and the headlines. I mean, back in May, the mood was incredibly difficult and bleak in Kharkiv. You know, and that's a city I've spent a lot of time in. I know it very well. I haven't been there since late April, but during that heavy Russian barrage, I mean, the city was being attacked multiple times a day in May. And this is when, you know, Washington at that point was still refusing to let Ukrainians even hit just across the border, a few miles from Kharkiv City. And so it made Kharkiv into a sitting duck. But once the White House changed its stance and Ukraine was able to hit back in a limited way on Russian soil, that really is the story. And that story has not been told very well. But since early June, Kharkiv has become significantly safer. And so there are not major missile attacks there on a regular basis, maybe once a week or so, a few attacks. And so obviously that's terrible and that's still a problem. But compared to what was happening there in May, the city is the outlook is not so bleak. And this is simply because of that permission that was given from Washington after, you know, it became, I mean, I remember President Zelensky, who usually speaks, you know, pretty calmly and coolly. He, you know, in May, I mean, the situation was so desperate, he began to lose his cool and to demand and to beg for this permission. And he did that with a unified voice with so many people who support Ukraine. And so I think the headline to come out of Kharkiv now is that city was on the brink of being destroyed. a few months ago, but because a Ukrainian ability to hit back on Russian soil in a limited way, the city's safer now. And so actually the outlook is, you know, those people have been through enough. So I think if these days there's a strong spirit there, and even in that city, a bit more optimism because of all the, you know, everything they've been through. And I think you look at, we've heard so often about the Russian red lines, and you can even look on, I just saw this on Wikipedia, a very straightforward, simple examination of all of the times that the Kremlin has said, declared a red line, you know, going back to 2022 and saying, if the West gives Ukraine tanks, we're going to go nuclear. If the West gives Ukraine long-range weapons, we're going to go nuclear. If the West gives Ukraine permission to hit anything on Russian soil, we're going to go nuclear. And you can just see every single red line that has been crossed. In fact, 17 of the 19 clearly definable Kremlin red lines have been crossed eventually. You know, once you know, Ukraine shows what they can do, and Washington finally agrees to give permission, and that line is crossed, and we see, instead of, you know, Russia carrying out its threats, instead we see Ukraine getting safer in those places and Russia getting weaker. And so I think Kharkiv is an example of that, of how if you have the tools and the permission to fight back, that's the way to win. But amazingly, that story still gets missed.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess it depends who you talk to. The story I mentioned, actually a New York Times story about the mood in Kharkiv, and the story points out that things were starting to get better, but then when that shopping center was bombed at the end of May, some folks said things have become worse. But your perspective is pretty interesting about what is really going on there, Joe.
Well, and I think, I mean, and it, you know, a lot of it is also, there's the perspective of the reporter writing the story, just as my perspective and sharing these stories with you, all of that can be very personal too. And I think, you know, there's many brave reporters that come here, but their storytelling is influenced by what they see, what they know. And, you know, every single American, I think I can say definitively, you know, I've been in Kyiv for 3 weeks now, and every single American I know here has had some bizarre episode in the past 3 weeks, and something that makes them, like, some kind of threat. Some of them have had Russian language notes put on their doors of their flats.
Oh.
This applies to people in the media or people here to invest and to help Ukraine. And the you know, so threats, you know, pretty nasty things that really can't repeat. Strange people following them. Many, many different episodes. And I've heard this for 3 weeks from almost everyone I speak with there who's from America. And then this same thing happened to me yesterday. And what it is the most I can say about it now is people making sure that you know that they know where you are, what you're doing, where you stay, you know, the places you frequent, where I go for a run. And it, for me, this was, so I'd heard stories and warnings about this for 3 weeks. And for me yesterday, and probably these people are listening right now, it was made abundantly clear to me in sort of a cheerful, smiley way that everything I do is being watched.
Hmm.
And so this is the intimidation campaign those who don't want people to report and tell the story or help in any way the cause of the Ukrainians. And so now I can say I felt that very keenly here. And even in a bizarre way, I was given by some people who I just sort of approached me, and they gave me as a gift. They said, "We want to give you a gift." And it was a voice recorder, like a really high end German voice recorder. And I said, "I'm a reporter. I have all this stuff. I don't need it. No, we want to give it to you." And like, obviously, like, no one would be stupid enough to accept that. Right. And so I think what we see is sort of this intimidation from it, sort of in a bumbling way. And I think often with the Russian special agents, they can be very bumbling, because if you come from a country where there's no free speech, you're not used to people thinking critically, like most people in the free world do. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, it's a blessing, because it's easy to tell who these people are. But I can say that after 3 weeks of hearing these stories from other Americans here, now I see that keenly myself. And And certainly that affects the news coverage that we see, too.
Yeah, it's scary. You've mentioned from time to time that sometimes the soldiers out in the field there in Ukraine actually are listening to WGN Radio. And a number of our listeners emailed us and texted us a question about that. How do the soldiers on the front line charge their phones? That's how they're listening, isn't it? Or is it, Joe?
Yeah, it's on their phones. I mean, you know, and there's the actual the zero line, the trench, but then, you know, people are rotating back to, you know, to stay a little bit away from, you know, several kilometers away from the front, where you have your dugouts and your trenches or your safe houses. And so it's, you know, it's in those places when, you know, they have power supply and they have internet access, and you know, sometimes thanks to Starlink and other means, but they're able to stay in touch. I mean, in fact, you know, being able to be connected is a key way that Ukrainian warfare with drones works. And so it's a very tech savvy country. And so it's sort of a strange thing that you can be, you know, in this like World War One type of situation of trench warfare, but still, you know, in totally the modern world. And that's one thing that's helped, I think, the world understand what's happening there at the front, but it's also a way to keep people connected. And that's why I mean, we've never had a war like this before, where you know, so in basically real time you can know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is good. So people sitting, you know, in their kitchens in Oak Park or whatever, are, you know, are deeply connected in this way to people in the trenches.
Yeah, I don't know whether the soldiers in Ukraine care about Chicago traffic and weather, but they're going to hear all about it next on the news, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you, Joseph.
Until tomorrow. Thank you, Bob.